Good evening. Welcome to the Arizona Daily Sun program from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Bethany Williams, and I will be reading from the Tuesday, April 22nd, 2025 edition of the Arizona Daily Sun. Front page articles include Miniature Golf Course Near Summer Debut, Local Photographer to Tell Stories at Orpheum. But at the top, Light Up Navajo Celebrates 6 Years. This is by Sam McLaughlin, Sun staff reporter. Woody Smith Jr. and Genevieve Smith's house sits on a quiet, dusty, shadeless mesa speckled with dry grasses and crisscrossed by dirt roads. To the northeast, about 7 miles away, is the town of Loop. About a mile to the south are the upper reaches of Padre Canyon, which winds all the way down to Interstate 40, another 7 miles as the crow flies. The house, which they built themselves, Woody, 70, describes himself as a retired tradesman with experience in everything from welding to drywall, sits on the same home site where Woody's father lived while working for the Navajo Ordnance Depot in Belmont, and where Woody's grandparents lived before that. His sister's home is visible in the distance around a half mile to the east. The water that flows out of the kitchen tap comes from a 2,000-gallon tank buried behind one corner of the house. Woody fills it every week or two with water hauled from Flagstaff. The electricity needed to run the water pump comes from a set of solar panels acquired from the Loop Chapter house around 15 years ago, and they charge a bank of batteries, housed in a metal cabinet outside. But the batteries aren't working as well as they used to, Woody said. Every night, to prevent the house's refrigerator and freezing from shutting off when the batteries run low, he has to get out of bed to turn on a generator. They buy gasoline on trips to Winslow, where Genevieve's children live. Woody's children live in Crystal, New Mexico, on the eastern side of the reservation. Standing outside his home on April 15th and speaking in Diné, Woody told Navajo Tribal Utility Authority, NTUA, Public Affairs Manager Denise Bicenti, he had spent part of the previous day watching through binoculars as crews installed a new power line about a half mile to the north. He's eagerly anticipating the connection that will bring reliable electricity to his home site. The right-of-way between the Smith's home and the new line has been cleared, a roughly graded swath across the mesa's rocky ground, and the poles have been laid on the ground, awaiting the crews that will raise them. A single pole has been set in the ground behind the house, ready for the final link. After the electricity comes in, then I'm going to build another house on that side, probably, Woody said, pointing to a vacant corner of the property. I'm excited about the electricity, Genevieve said. She's a weaver, working up to 12 hours a day crafting rugs on a 7-foot-tall loom in the house's main room. After 24 years living here, she's looking forward to being able to turn the lights on for her weaving without worrying about a battery dying and sleeping through the night without thinking about the refrigerator. The work to energize the Smith's home site is part of this year's Light Up Navajo Project, NTUA's mutual aid initiative with the American Public Power Association, to extend electrical connections to Navajo families in rural, remote areas of the reservation. Since 2019, Bicenti explained, crews from public utility companies, investor-owned utilities, rural utility co-ops, and even unions have traveled to the Navajo Nation to assist in building new power lines and connecting homes. Now, in its 6th year of active operations, the COVID-19 pandemic forced a pause for 2020, the program is on track to surpass 1,000 connections. Crews have come from across the country to help, from Delaware, California, Wisconsin, Florida, and a dozen other states. NTUA provides the materials for the project and pays for the crew's lodging using funding from the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. The utilities cover the cost of labor. Tom Gerbig, one of a Salt River Project team that traveled up from Phoenix on April 5th for a two-week stint, said his crew had been working 16-hour days, driving each morning from a hotel in Winslow. This was his first time participating in Light Up Navajo. Just the day before, they had connected power for a woman named Della Begay, living near the community of cornfields. She had been living on her land for 70 years and never had power, Gerbig said. She almost cried just turning on the light. We take that for granted big time, Gerbig added. But she went in there and started flipping on lights, and she started to cry. She gave us all a big hug. Made it all well worth it. Another member of the SRP crew, Alex Apodaca, said, The first thing she was going to do is go to the store and buy meat, because she can store it now. This year was Apodaca's third time working for Light Up Navajo. I volunteer every time I can, he said. I just like helping people. The terrain, the wind, and the omnipresent dust can be challenging, Apodaca said, but he also enjoys the change of pace raising new lines from scratch provides. For us, it's just go, go, go out here. Their crew gathered for a lunch break, eating fry bread handed out from the back of a pickup truck by NTUA Project Supervisor Marcia Jensen and Project Administrator Orlina Ness. Both have worked with Light Up Navajo since its inception, guiding families from the initial application through to electrification. It's something else to see them turn on the lights, or see their gratitude and their expressions on their faces when they do get the electricity, Jensen said. Begay, she said, had first applied for a power connection around 2007. Many families are in similar situations, relying on costly gas-powered generators or solar systems with limited battery storage to provide at least some electrical power until they can connect to the grid. It's a lengthy project, but we managed to assist, Nez said. To qualify for the Light Up Navajo program, families must have a home site lease issued by the nation, and their house must be wired already. That in itself can be a burden for homeowners. But the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, based out of Chicago, sent a team of 20 electricians to assist families with wiring their homes last year, and will send another team this year, Bicenti said. There are more than 1,000 Navajo homes across the reservation that are not connected to an electrical grid. Some are close to existing infrastructure, requiring only a short extension, but others, like the Smiths home site, are miles from the nearest pavement or power line. One of the questions we get from people is, why do they live so far from utilities? Bicenti said. And that's their ancestral homeland. That's where they homesteaded, where they would like to maintain that homestead because it's passed down through generations. Usually, when we energize an area that's so isolated, then the younger generation tends to put up their homes, she added, so it kind of brings families back together. Only after a family's eligibility has been confirmed and NTUA has obtained environmental and archaeological clearances for the power line corridor can the hard work of installing the poles and cables begin. That day, Gerbig said, the pace of his crew's work had been slowed by tough ground. We're doing about 15 poles a day, and that's because the digging's really hard. It's all rock, he explained. If the digging was easier, we could go a lot faster, but we can only go as fast as our digger can go. And a photograph shows Fernando Blanco, part of an SRP crew, participating, monitoring the progress of a hole being drilled for the power line, and the worker is concealed up to their waist by clouds of dust, so you can just see the top half of their body. Where the ground is soft, drilling the 6-foot-deep holes required to set the poles can be a matter of minutes, but where the drill has to punch through hard rock, it might take an hour and a half to bore the same 6 feet. Up ahead on the road cut, SRP crew member Fernando Blanco was momentarily enveloped in a cloud of pale dust as the truck-mounted drill churned into the earth. The drill operator raised the drill bit, and Blanco checked the depth of the hole, then inspected the drill's carbide tips. It's just eating through 'em, he said. To the west, a crew from Arizona Public Service, APS, was setting poles on both sides of Navajo Road 6910. Mervyn Smith, driving his Ford pickup north toward Loop Road, had stopped to ask about providing a meal for the workers. His family has held a home site lease nearby since at least 1976. Over the decades, politicians stumping for votes had repeatedly promised to bring electricity to the area, but those promises were never fulfilled, he said. The first thing he plans to plug in, a cooler, he said with a chuckle, to take the edge off the coming summer heat. That was Light Up Navajo Brings Power to Reservation Homes. Next, Miniature Golf Course Near Summer Debut by Cody Bashore. For anyone who has driven along Route 66 over the past few weeks, it may be no secret that work is well underway on an 18-hole miniature golf course that was initially approved in March 2023. After the site plan was approved in August of 22, and a conditional use permit was issued by the City of Flagstaff's P&Z Commission 6 months later, Kyle McCain and Cameron Howell have now seen the front nine of Putt Tech Flagstaff take shape. Most everybody I've shown this idea to, the one word I've heard is need. Flagstaff needs something like that, said McCain, who owns Budget Blinds of Northern Arizona next door to Putt Tech Flagstaff. And I've heard that time and time again over the last few years. While McCain purchased the property back in July of 2020, and work began in fall of 24 on transitioning the space to the putting course, he and Howell used the meantime to plan out much of the vision for the course and the restaurant occupying the existing building, which previously served as a convenience store. I learned something from everyone we build. There's no question, Howell said. We've made decisions on this thing for years now. It hasn't been like how the course plays or the breaks, but it's been decisions on what we're going to serve inside the grill, what the paint color is going to be like. All those things we've been talking about for years, so it's not like we've been just sitting around waiting. Howell officially started Putt Tech in 2015 after the nine-hole putting course he installed at his own home drew rave reviews from friends and family, leading to requests for him to create courses for others as well. A decade later, with McCain among his business partners for the company, Putt Tech has now completed nearly 100 projects. Among the most recent courses is one installed inside the new headquarters for Dude Perfect, which was toured on ESPN's social media accounts. With Howell creating the courses for a variety of clients, such as World Series champion and former Arizona Diamondback pitcher Patrick Corbin, among many others, and McCain acquiring the property adjacent to his existing business, the partnership in Flagstaff became a natural fit. McCain and Howell have known one another for decades, going from childhood friends to playing golf together in college. While the former gas station initially served as additional parking for McCain's neighboring Budget Blinds of Northern Arizona, McCain landed on partnering with Howell to create the first corporate-owned Putt Tech commercial course. I love golf. I coach my kids, Northland Prep Academy, golf team, so golf, to me, has just always been something I've been passionate about and have a real joy over, McCain said. I've been here almost 20 years. I know a ton of people in this community. I've been in tons of their houses just doing blinds, me, myself, and I, when we started that business, so that's going to be really rewarding, just to see a few smiles come through that door. Howell and McCain have some surprises in store for visitors once Putt Tech officially opens in Flagstaff this summer. While some are better kept secret for now, others could build the anticipation for some experienced and knowledgeable golfers. Howell draws inspiration for some of the holes he created through famous courses, with the back nine of Flagstaff's Putt Tech course planning to include Augusta National's Amen Corner and the 16th green of the Phoenix Open at TPC Scottsdale, among others. Kyle's wanted a putting course for a while now, let's just say that, Howell said. He's been to my house a number of times, and we have such a good time. He's been to a lot of other putt-tech facilities, so this has been a little dream, and a little Disneyland for Kyle, and I'm excited to be part of it. Howell's experience as a golfer has assisted him in visualizing how to create the terrain of each hole and maximizing the area he has to build courses, which naturally varies between each custom project. I want the first tee and the 10th tee to be near each other, and I need the 9th green to come back. Howell said, when I see it, it's what the routing that will get us back to this point, and how can I have some long holes, some short holes, some right to left, some left to right. A much different environment than traditional miniature golf courses. Howell's courses replicate typical putting in a game of golf, with the reeds, breaks, and hazards. Most holes are still intended to be par 2 or par 3, but without the windmills, tunnels, and clowns commonly associated with mini-golf. The experience is still aimed at a family atmosphere, with grandparents, parents, and children able to play alongside one another and keep scores relatively close. We've made a choice. We really want this to be family-friendly, Howell said, adding as an example that Putt-Tech's accompanying restaurant will not serve alcohol and hopes to serve as an option for children's birthday parties. Those specific hours of operation will likely be determined by the time of the year. The course will include heated lamps to assist with warmth and lighting at night, as Putt-Tech will be compliant with Flagstaff's efforts to mitigate light pollution and maintain dark skies. Putt-Tech plans to serve typical grill items such as burgers, hot dogs, chicken fries, and onion rings to accompany ice cream options as well, and will offer some seating inside in the front with the front nine and behind the restaurant along the back nine. Putt-Tech is set to open sometime this summer, with a more concrete date to be announced later. That article was Miniature Golf Course Nears Summer Debut. And in this last story, the newspaper is the news. Local photographer to tell stories at Orpheum. And it's by Ryan Heintjes, the KNAU news director. For more than three decades, photographer Jake Bacon has served as the eyes of Flagstaff, so to speak. He's the chief photographer for the Arizona Daily Sun, and as a journalist has borne witness to countless consequential moments in northern Arizona, both great and small, joyful and harrowing. On Wednesday night, Bacon takes the stage at the Orpheum Theater at 7 p.m. to talk about some of his favorite images, the stories behind them, and the importance of community journalism. Asks Heintjes, what inspired this retrospective, if you will, and what are you hoping will come out of it? Jake Bacon, what's an evening with Jake Bacon apart from boring? I'll be talking about my 30-plus year career in this community documenting life on this mountain. And so the format is going to be me on the stage showing photos, talking about photos, and really talking about what's behind the photos in terms of how those photos tell the stories of the people that live here. I'm blessed that my life is spent out in the community, talking to the community, meeting people. I really saw it as a gift to be able to reach out to the community and hold a mirror up and reflect to the community how connected we all are. Heintjes, in addition to being a journalist, you're really I would consider you a community advocate. Does modern journalism need more of that? Does modern reporting need more investment in local community? Bacon, I'm biased, so I mean, obviously I'm a unicorn. I've made a career out of community journalism, out of staying in one job at one newspaper for an entire career, and I don't know anybody in the industry who's done that. One of my early mentors, Paul Sweetser, he did that, where he was born and raised in Flagstaff, spent a life working at the Daily Sun, and I followed in those very big footsteps. But yeah, absolutely. We all need connection. It's what we all look for. And in a world of social media and online, what do we all do? We all find things to follow and things to be connected to that speak to us. I have no interest in the online world of building a following and building an audience through division. I would rather have that attention. I would rather have the attention that comes from, let's bring people together. Let's not separate people apart. Let's bring them together. Heinches, we're in a pretty unique business where we're exposed to the worst of humanity at times, but also sometimes the best in humanity. How has being a community journalist impacted how you see the world and people around you? Bacon, it gives me the opportunity to see people at their best and at their worst. And you know, it takes a dramatic toll seeing people at their worst. I take it personally. It's hard not to sit in a courtroom and see the things that I've seen. It's hard not to be at accident sites or scenes of devastation and to document that and not take that personally and take it on. But that's the minority of what I do. The vast majority of what I do is seeing people at their best and seeing people shine and seeing people being recognized for that. It's magic. I mean, it really is magic. And if I can capture that and I can share that with other people, that's so valuable to the community. It's valuable to me, but I think more importantly, it's valuable to the community. Heinches, we've all witnessed how media and journalism has shifted and changed in good ways, maybe in less than good ways. Nonetheless, local news, local journalism still serves a very significant and important purpose. What to you is the continued value of local news? Bacon, that's a great question, and that's definitely something I'll be speaking about during this event. If you don't have the local news, the news doesn't get covered. So if KNAU isn't out there reporting on the environment, reporting on issues on the reservations, reporting on things out there, if the newspaper isn't at city council meetings, I think it's vital. If we don't have local news, we don't have local journalism, and it doesn't get covered. And there are really big stories that everybody cares about, and if local news isn't covering it, Phoenix News, statewide news, will give it glancing coverage. National news, if it affects the nation, will cover it, but stuff that day-to-day affects us in our community, we have to have local news for. It's something that we all should fight to protect. Heinches, amen. Jake, thanks for talking to me today. Bacon, it's been a pleasure to be here. And Ryan Heinches is the news director and managing editor of KNAU Arizona Public Radio, an NPR member station. He's worked as a journalist in Northern Arizona for more than 20 years. An audio version of this interview can be found at knau.org. Of course, you just heard an audio version, but I guess the original audio. That was Local Photographer to Tell Stories at Orpheum. On the inside of the paper, Plaque Celebrates Voter Protection of McMillan Mesa by Sam McLaughlin, Sun staff reporter. Former members of the campaign to preserve Flagstaff's McMillan Mesa Natural Area celebrated on Thursday the installation of a new plaque commemorating the successful ballot initiative that protected the land over 8 years ago. Flagstaff voters approved Proposition 413, also known as the Greater Buffalo Park Proposition, in the 2016 general election with 86% of votes in support. The proposition designated 300 acres of city-owned land in the vicinity of Buffalo Park as open space and mandated voter approval of any future changes to the land's use. The plaque acknowledging that history is inlaid on a large boulder next to the McMillan Mesa Loop Trail, just past the eastern end of the pedestrian bridge on Cedar Avenue. Celia Barretts, A former city council member who was one of the leading organizers for the initiative and the city's vice mayor at the time, said the plaque was an important reminder of the collective action that preserved the landscape. Along with the original Buffalo Park, the city land that's protected by the Citizen Initiative defines Flagstaff. It's what makes the city such a special place, Barrett said. And when these special lands are developed, they're gone forever. There's no going back. The voters had tremendous foresight in their overwhelming support of the measure. Ethan Aumack, executive director of the Grand Canyon Trust, also helped organize support for the measure. The final vote, he said, was a real testament to the community coming together, cherishing this place. I think this plaque is a beautiful representation of the enduring value of that campaign and of protection in this area, he added. McMillan Mesa comprises about 10% of the total land managed by the City of Flagstaff's Open Space Program, which also includes Picture Canyon Natural and Cultural Preserve, and the Observatory Mesa Natural Area. The Open Space Program website notes that McMillan Mesa is one of the last intact native grasslands within the city and home to a variety of wildlife. The area can be accessed on the McMillan Mesa Loop Trail, part of the Flagstaff Urban Trail system, or the Arizona Trail, both of which are open to non-motorized recreational use. I used to live nearby. It's very nice, McMillan Mesa is. That was Plaque Celebrates Voter Protection of McMillan Mesa. You are listening to the Arizona Daily Sun. On Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been bringing the disabled audio access to print information for over 45 years. Learn how you can support us at our website, sunsounds.org, where you can listen to our live streams or find individual episodes on demand. You can now also listen to us on the Sun Sounds app, which is available for both Apple and Android devices at their respective app stores. We move on now to local news briefs. Coconino County Juvenile Court to participate in third annual kinship fair. All these are reported to be by Daily Sun staff. Coconino County Juvenile Court, CCJC, and Mercy Cares Foster Adoptive and Kinship Council, in partnership with 24 local and state agencies, will team up to bring basic and much-needed resources to families caring for their young relatives. The third annual Kinship Fair will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. on Tuesday, April 29th at Puente de Hoyo Elementary School. Created in 2023 to assist kinship caregivers who stepped up to provide a place for a relative's children to stay as their relatives went through the child welfare process, the fair is expanded to all families taking care of a loved one's children. Kinship caregivers do this incredible thing of keeping their grandchildren, nieces, and nephews out of a foster home and keep them home with family, said Sandra Quintanilla, the dependency program coordinator for Coconino County Juvenile Court. We wanted to support them so they don't feel they have to deal with all this new situation, with this new situation all by themselves. Caregivers will be able to connect with a variety of service providers, including Coconino County's WIC program, WIC, the Department of Economic Security offices, physical and behavioral health, Indigenous health, parenting classes, access enrollment, and family support, like guardianship paperwork. Kinship caregivers are making it possible for children to stay with their families, and it's not always easy, said Alejandra Velarde, who oversees Mercy Care's behavioral health programs for children in foster care in northern Arizona. We're honored to work with community partners, just like the Coconino County Juvenile Court, to make sure that these families know they aren't alone. Arts and crafts will be provided for children while parents peruse the available services. Pizza and refreshments will be available while supplies last. The event is free, and all families are encouraged to attend. Puente de Hoyo Elementary School is located at 301 North 4th Street. Sorry, scratch that. 3401 North 4th Street in Flagstaff. NCHC to offer free health screenings and resources at event. North Country Healthcare will be hosting a community health fair in Flagstaff on Saturday, April 26th, offering free screenings, resources, and information. The Flagstaff Community Health Fair will be at the Aquaplex. It's presented by Desert Financial Credit Union and is free to attend. The fair is an annual event that includes on-site health screenings, education, diet, and fitness advice, and information about affordable insurance plans and wellness programs, among other resources. It also includes the Ahoy to Health Kids Zone with health and safety information, activity stations, balloon artists, face paint, and giveaways. NCHC's Well Woman Health Check program will provide on-site mammograms in partnership with Arizona Complete Health. Appointments can be made by calling 928-522-9404 with free screening available to uninsured individuals. Sonora Quest Laboratories will be offering free comprehensive metabolic blood panels on a first-come, first-served basis. The panels will be offered on a walk-in basis, and fasting is not necessary. Sponsors for this year's fair include City of Flagstaff Pros, Delta Dental of Arizona, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona, Sonora Quest, Arizona Central Credit Union, Charlie Health, and Knackered Pepsi. All proceeds support NCHC programs and services such as preventative cancer screenings and treatment for those who can't afford care, and supporting survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence. More information, including a list of exhibitors, can be found at northcountryhealthcare.org/FCHF. Coconino County Elections Department wins a Cleary. The Coconino County Elections Department announced on Wednesday, April 16th, it was recognized for excellence in election administration within the Contingency Planning, Exemplary Contingency Planning and Emergency Response Efforts category for small and medium jurisdictions. Also known as the Clearys, the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, or EAC, presents the annual awards program to celebrate the work of election offices across the country. Now in its ninth year, the Clearys honored programs that took place during the 2024 presidential election year. The Coconino County Elections Department's situational awareness training for poll workers, developed in partnership with Coconino County Sheriff's Office, was one of 53 programs nationally recognized. Launched prior to the November of 24 general election, the training focused on emergency preparedness at polling places across one of the largest and most remote counties in the U.S. The approach addressed the unique security challenges posed by Coconino County's geography and limited emergency response resources. Receiving the Cleary Award is a testament to the dedication and innovation of our entire elections team, said Coconino County Elections Director Eslier Musta. This national recognition underscores Coconino County's commitment to enhancing election processes and ensuring voter confidence through continuous improvement and collaboration. The Clearys assist in fulfilling the EAC's mission to serve as a clearinghouse for election administration information under the Help America Vote Act. The EAC is an independent, bipartisan federal agency solely focused on election administration. Submissions were judged on innovation, sustainability, outreach, cost-effectiveness, replicability, and the generation of positive results. For more information on the Clearys and each awardee, visit eac.gov. I thought that was all of the briefs, but there are more on page 5. Okay, Nestle Purina awards $30,000 to area nonprofits. Staff of the Nestle Purina factory in Flagstaff awarded $30,000 in donations from the Purina Trust Fund to United Way of Northern Arizona and High Country Humane, the company announced on Monday, April 14th. Partnering with United Way of Northern Arizona and High Country Humane Society helps us reach people and pets in our community where support is needed most, Ramon Martinez, manager of the Flagstaff Purina factory, said in a press release. At Purina, we're as committed to strengthening our communities as we are to making high-quality pet food. We're proud to continue that commitment through these donations. Liz Archuleta, president and CEO of United Way of Northern Arizona, said, "The support from Purina allows us to provide essential early learning opportunities to more children." The organization received $20,000 to support the expansion of its Kinder Camp initiative, a free 4-week kindergarten readiness program for children of low-income families. Expanding Kinder Camp means more students will enter kindergarten with confidence and families will access essential learning tools to promote literacy and to support their child's educational achievement now and into the future," Archuleta continued. "We're grateful for Purina's commitment to our community." High Country Humane received $10,000 for improvements to its outdoor cat patio. Acting Shelter Director Tresban Rivera said the donation would significantly impact the ability to provide for our cats' welfare and allow the shelter to create a safer, more enriching environment for our cats. The Purina Trust Fund has contributed $150 million to nonprofit organizations in Purina factory communities over the past 5 years, the company noted. To learn more about or support United Way or High Country Humane, visit nazunitedway.org or highcountryhumane.org. Page High Welding Program selected for initiative from Airgas. Page High School was among 72 schools selected to take place in the High School Welding Education Initiative from Airgas and Air Liquide Company. This initiative started in 2018, and according to Wednesday's announcement, has assisted 162 schools across the United States so far, affecting more than 12,300 students. Since 2021, it said, almost 1,900 students have secured jobs after graduation. The announcement cited the American Welding Society, which predicted a need for 320,500 new welding professionals by 2029. Schools were chosen based on unmet need, a productive welding program, passionate teachers, and enthusiastic local Airgas champions. Participating schools are provided with professional development training for teachers, safety and welding equipment, and consumables, and other resources. The schools selected for the 2025 academic year are in 33 states across the country. Page High School is one of two participants from Arizona. The other is Weld Like a Girl in Yuma. We're thrilled to expand the Airgas High School Welding Education Initiative and further our commitment to supporting welding education, said Airgas Chief Operating Officer Jay Woolley. Sorry, Worley. By investing in these 72 programs, we're not only addressing a critical skills gap, but also empowering students to pursue rewarding careers in welding, engineering, and technical fields. More about this initiative can be found at airgas.com. Century Milk Vetch Recovery Plan announced. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, USFWS, announced recently it has approved a revised recovery plan for the Century Milk Vetch, an endangered plant found only on the South Rim and the North Rim of Grand Canyon National Park. The overall goal of the recovery plan is to recover the species so it no longer needs protections under the Endangered Species Act. The century milk vetch was originally listed as endangered in 1990 under the ESA, and the USFWS finalized the first recovery plan for the species in 2006. Since then, updated knowledge about the plant and recovery efforts necessitated recovery plan revisions. The perennial herb develops into flat, small mats in pockets of shallow soil within Kaibab limestone, the uppermost rock layer of the Grand Canyon. Its purple flowers, approximately the size of a pencil eraser, commonly attract several kinds of mason bees and other small pollinators. The recovery strategy focuses on ensuring and maintaining resiliency in populations on both the north and south rims. Recovery objectives include improving the understanding of threats to the species, identifying additional threats, implementing conservation measures to improve resiliency, and maintaining resilient populations. The USFWS will work with the National Park Service, non-governmental organizations, academia, and other conservation partners to implement the recovery plan. Recovery plans are not regulatory documents, and implementation actions are not required by the ESA. Instead, recovery plans serve as roadmaps with specific management actions to foster cooperation in conservation and for listed species and their ecosystems. The final recovery plan is available on ecos.fws.gov/ecp/species/8437. And finally, in briefs, ABOR approves no-cost extensions for research projects. The Arizona Board of Regents approved no-cost extensions for three research grants at the April board meeting. All three are Regents Research Grants funded through the Technology and Research Initiatives Fund, TRIF, and involve experts from Arizona's three public state universities. Researchers at Northern Arizona University are part of all three projects. ABOR has awarded $36 million for 23 research projects since 2022, according to its announcement. The approval of these extensions will allow the research on these projects to finish, using the remainder of the funds they were initially awarded in fiscal year 22. Researchers from these three universities are working with the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality to inventory abandoned mines for both potential risks and environmental management options. ABOR's announcement notes that Arizona has an estimated 200,000 potentially hazardous mine features, which could affect water supplies. The project is attempting to fill in a gap, as there is not a comprehensive data set that provides information about those sites. Another project has researchers from NAU and the University of Arizona working with ADEQ to develop a cost-effective and environmentally friendly technology to remove PFAS, poly/perfluoroalkyl substances, also called forever chemicals, from water. ABOR approved both of these projects to receive $1.5 million in funding over 3 years. All three universities have researchers working on a project to understand how valley fever is transmitted through wind-blown dust, as well as a way to suppress dust in fallow fields. ADEQ and the Arizona Department of Health Services are also involved in this effort, which received $4.5 million in funding from ABOR over 3 years. More information can be found at azregents.edu. Now it's time for bum ba dum bum 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 Sports! At Spring Showcase, Wright looks for ways to improve NAU football's offense. By Michaela O'Bannon, Sun Sports Editor. After several closed practices, Northern Arizona football hosted a spring showcase at the Walk-Up Sky Dome on Friday to demonstrate its progress so far. The showcase was the team's 15th practice this year, and fans, students, and alums were invited to watch from the stands or the sidelines. The team began the showcase with routine stretches and drills before playing a short scrimmage. During breaks between the scrimmage quarters, fans were invited on the field for interactive games with the team. After the first quarter, punter Ben D'Aquila launched balls from 50 yards away toward fans in the red zone, attempting to catch the balls and win prizes. Other games included a 40-yard dash and a tackling contest. Although Brian Wright finished his first year as head coach for Northern Arizona with an undefeated season at home, he said he's looking for even more improvements, specifically in the offense, in 2025. As we go back and we evaluate last year's offense, I just felt like there was so much room for growth there, really in all phases of it, Wright said. The running game, the passing game, our pass protection, our ability to convert in really key situations down at the goal line or the red zone or fourth down conversion, just a lot of areas there to get better at. Most of the drills before the scrimmage were focused on some aspect of what Wright wanted to improve, such as passing drills. During the scrimmage, they focused on completing short passes between the quarterback and receivers, rather than long, extravagant passes to show off for the fans in the audience. Wright improved football at Northern Arizona dramatically in his debut as head coach last year. Most notably, he led the team to the first round of the FCS Championship Tournament and had a winning season of 8-5 overall. He said after a year with the Lumberjacks, performing to that level is now the expectation. We've set a standard here on how to operate on a daily basis, and we really focused on that process and working toward that standard every day, Wright said. In 2024, the Lumberjacks had a total of 270 first downs, compared to 219 the year prior. Between rushing and passing, they gained almost 1,000 more yards under Wright, with a total of 5,185 yards compared to 4,179 in 2023. Over the course of the spring semester, Wright and his team of coordinators and coaches built a 93-man roster, including 14 incoming freshmen. Some are familiar faces, such as running back Seth Cromwell, who had 681 rushing yards and 9 touchdowns in 2024. Others are recruits, such as defensive back Jalen Collins, a redshirt freshman from Marana High School, who ended his high school career with 6 interceptions, 8 pass breakups, a blocked punt, and a blocked field goal. Most recognizably, starting quarterback Ty Pennington has returned to play another year with the Lumberjacks. There's just a ton of chemistry between the new guys and the returners, Pennington said. We've worked really hard in the off-season just drilling those fundamentals every day, and it's starting to pay off. Last year, Pennington had 13 passing touchdowns and 7 rushing touchdowns. He had 2,288 passing yards and another 437 rushing. Pennington played with Wright at Pittsburgh State in 2023 before they both transferred to Northern Arizona the following season. Pennington said he's looking forward to fine-tuning the offense with Wright before the start of the next school year. We've seen a lot of improvements this year, but there's so much room to get better, and that's what really excites me and the rest of the offense, Pennington said. We're in a better spot than we were last spring. There's just a ton of room for improvement on every aspect, on offense, on defense. Seeing where that could get us, seeing our potential, that just really excites all of us. It makes us hungry. With 15 practices under his belt, Pennington said he has a connection with many different receivers and tight ends. The showcase was a chance to find who he connects best with on the field. Looking toward the future, Wright said he's hopeful for a better offense and was optimistic in the Lumberjacks after the spring showcase ended. That was Wright looks to improve offense in 2025. And now it's Ask the Vet with Julianne Miller. The Last Bark. Well, friends, neighbors, fellow animal lovers of Flagstaff in northern Arizona, it seems the time has come to hang up my stethoscope, at least in this public forum. For over a decade, this column has served as my sounding board, confessional, and humble attempt to share a sliver of the beautiful, messy, and utterly captivating world of veterinary medicine. Today, with bittersweet nostalgia and a quiet sense of completion, I write my final Ask the Vet column. For as long as I can remember, a profound connection with the animal kingdom has been a guiding force in my life. Animals have always offered an unparalleled form of companionship, loyalty, and unconditional love throughout my life, and it's this deep affection, this inherent understanding of the unique language spoken through a wagging tail or a gentle nudge that ultimately steered me towards a career dedicated to their well-being. The privilege of being their voice, of easing their suffering, and of witnessing the unbreakable bond they share with their humans has been an immeasurable gift. For over two decades, I've had the profound privilege of being their advocate, their healer, and sometimes their gentle guide in those final moments. And for the last 10-plus years, this column has allowed me to extend that advocacy beyond the clinic walls into your homes and hearts. This column tackled the age-old debate of kibble versus raw, navigated the anxieties of flea and tick season in our beautiful Arizona landscape, and celebrated the miraculous recoveries from seemingly insurmountable illnesses. We've mourned the quiet passing of beloved companions, sharing in the unique grief that only the loss of a furry family member can bring. I've tried my best to offer practical advice, a touch of reassurance, and perhaps a little insight into the intricate workings of the animal kingdom. The world of veterinary medicine has evolved considerably in the last decade. AI is now a serious topic of discussion, offering both exciting possibilities and ethical considerations. Our understanding of animal behavior and welfare has deepened, leading to more compassionate and holistic approaches to care. Yet the fundamental bond between humans and animals remains unchanged, a timeless connection built on unconditional love and unwavering loyalty. This enduring relationship has been the constant thread woven through all my years of practice and every word I've written here. But as the saying goes, all good things must eventually come to an end. It's not a goodbye to veterinary medicine entirely. The passion for healing and the love for animals will always be a part of me. Rather, it's a shift in how I dedicate my time and energy. To my readers, thank you. Thank you for your curiosity, your trust, and your unwavering love for your animal companions. You've enriched my life in countless ways, and your stories have often been the highlight of my week. Keep asking questions, keep advocating for your pets, and keep cherishing the incredible bond you share. Thank you to the Daily Sun for dutifully publishing my column over the years, and a special thanks to Diane Jarvis for stepping in as my editor after we lost Pam Tharp. I'm grateful to Pam for her role as my editor for many years and her devoted support for my column. Her loss is deeply felt within the community. For now, though, this is Dr. Miller signing off. May your trails be filled with wagging tails and gentle purrs, and may the love you give to your animals return to you tenfold. It has for me. Dr. Julianne Miller is a Flagstaff veterinarian. Ask the Vet will have a new writer who will debut the next column. Here are some events happening in the community on the 24th, on Thursday. Chicago the Musical. Flagstaff High School Drama Club presents Chicago the Musical. Come out to support local arts and public school students, 7 p.m., April 26th. 9:30 p.m. Okay, so on April 24th, I guess it's 7 p.m., and it's 9:30 p.m. on the 26th. Tickets are between $8 and $10 at 400 West Elm Avenue in Flagstaff. Facilitation Lab Flagstaff with Jake Knapp and Voltage Control. Join us for the first Facilitation Lab Flagstaff. Practice differentiators from Jake Knapp's new book, Click. Grow your facilitation skills and connect with peers in a safe hands-on space. Come ready to roleplay and test out new facilitation methods on something you've been working on. This is from 3 to 5 p.m. and is free at 2225 North Gemini Drive in Flagstaff. Phone number 512-766-9125. Starlight in the Square in downtown Flagstaff. An evening under Flagstaff's dark skies featuring stargazing and local flavor. Celebrate International Dark Sky Week with a unique curated tasting and stargazing experience in Flagstaff's historic heritage square. Event begins at sunset with selected heavy hors d'oeuvres and specialty drinks themed to dark skies. Enjoy laser-guided tours of the night sky throughout the evening and close-up views of Mars, Jupiter, and other celestial objects through several telescopes scattered throughout the square. Proceeds support the Flagstaff Dark Skies Coalition and the Downtown Flagstaff Foundation. 7 to 10 p.m., tickets $30, Heritage Square. More information on that, 928-275-2655. Daily Sun calendar event submissions run in print and online free of charge. To submit events, visit azdailysun.com/add event. For a full list of events, visit azdailysun.com/calendar. You've been listening to the Arizona Daily Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. In Flagstaff, I'm your reader, Bethany Williams. Thanks for listening and have a great evening.